Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to episode 120 of the Talking Chop podcast. I am your host, Brad Roland. Join me for the first time in a couple of weeks now. Been too long. It's a good friend of the program, Scott Coleman. What's up, man?
What's up, Brad? Always nice to do one of these after a sweep of the Cardinals.
Yeah, we're recording about as fast as we ever have, I think, after a game finished. We were hoping this game was going to finish before 5:30 Eastern. And it's 5:32 Eastern as we're talking right now, and the game finished probably 5 minutes ago. So very, very good timing, despite the fact that the seventh inning got a little bit hairy on Sunday afternoon and kind of put a scare into the Braves after they led 6-0. But you mentioned, you know, it's a sweep. The team's now 48-34. We've passed the halfway point, which we're going to hit on a little bit later on the podcast. But, I mean, how much did your spirits change? I think it's been kind of funny to watch the highs and lows, especially on Twitter, of certain people. But, you know, after losing two series in a row to the Orioles and Reds and losing 5 out of 7 games, now they sweep the Cardinals, who are a better baseball team than either one of the teams they just lost to in the series, and now they're 48-34. It's, you know, some of that's just baseball being baseball, but how did your spirits change over the last couple of days?
Yeah, it was nice. You worry that, you know, the Reds are really playing well right now, but to lose 2 out of 3 to the Orioles and 4 out of 6 altogether, those two teams, it really hurts. And you don't want a bad little stretch to kind of derail what was a really promising first half. So to go into St. Louis, obviously Julio was great on Friday night. Max Fried was terrific Saturday. And then Folty was laboring through the heat a little bit today, but he was able to pitch well enough and the bullpen didn't blow it late. So yeah, to be 48-34, I think if we would have recorded 3 months ago and said, hey, they're going to be 48-34 at midway point, we probably both would have laughed and said, there's no way, but, pretty incredible. We'll see where I think the Nats and Phillies are, still in extra innings right now, but they'll be either 3 or 4 games up on the Phillies, depending on what happens there. So pretty special first half in a nice way. I get, you know, of course, a long way to go still, but we are in July and it was nice to pick up 3 in a row after tough week or a homestand in Atlanta.
Yeah, I mean, now I guess, you know, quote unquote on pace for about 95 wins. It was 94 before this because they were obviously, you know, 47-34, which is makes the math easy. But after a win, there it's about, you know, 94.8 wins that you're on pace for at this point, which is kind of wild to consider. I would still take the under on that probably, but still, the fact that they're now, you know, projected by most systems, if not all systems, to make the playoffs, more likely than they are to miss the playoffs. You know, 538 updates in real time. They have them at 67% right now to make the playoffs and 49% to win the division. Pretty impressive based on where we would have thought and where we said we thought they would be. You know, at this point in time. Just briefly, let's touch on the highs at least of the end here. I know you mentioned, you know, Max Fried and Julio Teheran, but Max Fried came up. You know, with Brandon McCarthy hitting the DL with right knee tendonitis. I'm not sure how worried you are about that necessarily because Fried looked very, very good. And I've long argued that the Braves have been sort of fooling around with him too much for a long time. I kind of wanted to see him pitch for, you know, 3, 4, 5 starts in a row and see how that goes. And start number one was very, very fun.
Absolutely. We were talking yesterday, you know, a handful of us were just chatting. I think it's kind of time to see what you have with Fried. They've really jerked him around. We've talked before about the bullpen usage last year, and he was up for a little bit, and he made the one start against the Mets, I think, on that doubleheader back on Memorial Day and pitched fairly well, but they sent him back down because they didn't want him rotting in the bullpen. And we all saw just how dominant he can be. I mean, when you have a 70 or 80 grade curveball, that's just a pitch that big league hitters don't see a bunch, and he was really able to use that. He was locating his fastball and was mixing in a couple changeups just to keep him honest. So, based on the DL and McCarthy, Fried should get another start on Thursday against another really good lineup with the Brewers. It's a hitter-friendly park, and Milwaukee has as good of lineup as anybody. It'll be a challenge, but I'm with you at this point. I think you kind of have to see what you have. He's 24, almost 25. He's been in the minors forever. Obviously, his upside's much, much higher than that of McCarthy or Miranda Ball Sanchez, if he comes back to earth. So really, really encouraging start. And hopefully he's able to have another good one on Thursday and keep it going, because the Braves are going to need somebody to step up in the second half, because they can't just rely on Fulte and Newcomb the whole way.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to overreact to one start, and that's what it was. It was one start, but Max Fried is very, very talented. No one would certainly not dispute that. Still, like, you know, in the minors this year, he outperformed his peripherals. Well, actually, you know, his peripherals were better than his actual performance, I should say. 4.29 ERA so far in AAA and 9 starts. Nothing to get terribly worried about there, because his peripherals are better than that. But I'm not sure people are going to be I don't know. Expectations might be a little bit too high now based on that first start, but still, I think Max Fried is at least intriguing and someone who looks like a major league starting pitcher. I mean, obviously, we don't know that full stop because we just haven't seen it enough, but somebody who definitely makes some sense as a starter moving forward and, as you mentioned, has much higher upside than McCarthy or Sanchez. And obviously, I think he's, you know, we've now seen this pretty clearly, ahead in the pecking order over somebody like Colby Allard, for obvious reasons. You know, Max Fried's been up before in different roles. Colby Allard's a lot younger, you know, 4 years younger, basically. So I think Fried's going to have an opportunity if even if they go, you know, obviously we're talking about Mike Soroka here in a second, but now with the weekend rotation being that Soroka's going to be out for a little while here, you know, Fried has every reason to get some starts, and hopefully he looks like he did the other day. I'm not expecting a 2.5 ERA for Fried, but he's actually a guy who's capable of something like that over at least a short period of time. So it should be fun to watch. It was definitely fun to watch him pitch over the weekend. The other guy who pitched very well is the exact opposite of Max Fried, and that's Julio Teheran, who we talked about, I think, on every podcast for like 6 weeks now. So I don't want to do too much on Julio, but he... I almost said he looked great. I'm not sure he looked great, but the numbers were very, very good in his start on over the weekend. So what do you make of that? I haven't asked you about that in about a month now. So where are you at on Julio?
You know, it seems like you flip a coin before the game starts, and heads it's going to be good and tails it's going to be bad. You really never know. He's had some really good starts this year. And then he's also gotten lit up by the likes of the Padres and the Orioles. You never know. That game started about as poorly as possible. I think he threw something like 12 of the first 15 pitches were balls. But he, to his credit, he settled in. He obviously kept the Cardinals off the board and really kind of settled in and got into a groove in the middle innings. And I think it was 6 scoreless. So you need Julio to be more consistent than he's been in the first half. His ERA is about 4.2. That's not terrible. That's kind of fourth starter range. But obviously, you dig a little deeper into his numbers, and there's some cause for concern. So I think he's going to be a big part moving forward. They need him to be better than what he's been, even just on a consistency basis. Even if he does a 4.2, 4.3 ERA the rest of the way, it can't be one good start and then one start where he can't get out of the third inning and he's given up 8 runs. He has to find some kind of consistency. The velocity's been a little bit better since he did the DL trip. He's still sitting around 90 with his fastball, which is obviously a concern, but I think that's who he is at this point in his career, for better or worse, and that's kind of who he's going to have to be, and you hope that he's at least able to find some level of consistency moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of all you can ask for with Julio, knowing that, you know, might get weird at times. We've seen that. The downside is pretty low, but when he looks, you know, close to right, he can still be a very, very solid, like, mid-rotation guy, which is all you need him to be at this point in time. All right, let's move off of that. Ronald Acuna came back this week. He missed just over a month, almost exactly a month, actually. He got injured on May 27th and returned to the lineup on June 29th. He homered on Saturday, had a very, very nice show of his speed on Sunday afternoon. He's been a very, very good player when he's played. I think people have sort of almost underrated how good he's been when he's played. Now he is sitting with a 115 WRC plus for the season, and I know that's not like anything that's just going to like blow you away, but the guy's 20 years old and is doing that. And I think, if anything, he's been better than I would have imagined as a rookie so far. Obviously, the month off gives us a much smaller sample than we would have liked to see from Acuna. But I mean, I'm not sure what the question is, but it's fun to have him back, to be sure.
Yeah, it is. You saw exactly on Sunday why he's so important to this team. You mentioned he literally stole a run in the middle innings there. I think it was the fifth inning when they rallied. He beat out an infield single by about a step, used his speed, then went first to third on a single up the middle, was able to beat a cutoff throw by a couple inches, and then he was able to slide in on a throw from first on an infield ground ball, and he was able to slide past the tag. And without his speed, he steals that run. It also just brings so much more depth to the team. We saw today Charlie Culberson started at third base. If Ronald Acuna is not in the lineup, Culberson's probably in left, and he isn't able to move around. So because the bench is so bad, it just gives another option. You're not forced to play Culberson every day. If you need to give someone like Johan Camargo a day off, or Dansby, or even Ozzy, it gives you some flexibility and obviously lengthens out what you're able to do and gives you some options. So excited to have him back. The home run, it was pretty great too. I thought to see him get a green light 3-0.
Yep.
I thought he just missed it at first, which even in that situation, a deep sack fly isn't the worst thing, you know, get the run on the board. But to give him the green light 3-0 and for him to hit it about 410 feet to center was pretty great to see. So obviously excited, and just I am glad the Braves took their time with him. It was a little bit more than a month. They really didn't rush him back, and I think that's commendable because you obviously don't want to rush him back and cause a worse injury. And you were kind of lucky once. You don't want to push your luck and obviously have something worse than what happened to him.
Yeah, they got very lucky. I think everybody kind of agrees on that with the way that the injury took place. So they did, you know, they had every reason to take it slow. They did. He looks great. He looks fully healthy. And I'm personally taking a lot of joy in watching the three young guys just fly around on the base pass. Swanson, Albies, and Acuna can all fly. I think Swanson, people don't necessarily understand how fast he is, but the guy is a ridiculous speed guy. I think everybody kind of knows about Cunha and Albies being that fast, but those three guys being able to just turn it on the base pass, in addition to Ender, who can obviously run as well. Basically everybody but Freeman and the catcher spot can run, which is nice. And it's a little more fun than when you have your, you know, plotting, you know, base to base teams. A lot of those first to thirds are definitely fun to watch. And especially from the young guys who are, high pedigree guys that play hard and fly around like that is a lot of fun. Go ahead.
It's been a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah. On the less fun side, we have to talk about Mike Soroka hitting the 60-day DL this week. I will say it looks like the 60-day DL was a little scarier than it might actually be. I say might because we just don't know. But Alex Anthopoulos kind of played it off talking to Dave O'Brien this week and said that it wasn't a surprise and more of a formality. And basically, they just want to shut him down for about 4 weeks. And as a result of that, they saved the 40-man, all that fun stuff. They can just kind of basically saying that like his timetable was going to be around 60 days anyway. So they just put him on 60-day DL to be safe and just help themselves out transactionally. And basically, not like a no worry, nothing to see here kind of thing, but they definitely downplayed that particular roster move. I will say, though, shoulder issues is the second time, and apparently he never got fully right after the first time. That's a little bit worrisome for a guy as young as he is.
Absolutely. You hit the nail on the head with the 60-day DL being scarier than what it was. And you're right. If you do the math, okay, he shut down 4 weeks. That's, you know, give or take 30 days, and then he's going to have to start a throwing program and make at least two or three rehab starts. So as you and Anthopoulos said, it was more of a formality, I think, just to give another a little more roster flexibility to hopefully help out the bullpen and bring in some fresh arms. Anytime it's a shoulder with a young guy, you worry. Thankfully, this is kind of the first time, or at least publicly the first time, we've heard of Soroka having a shoulder injury, really any kind of an injury. So you're hopeful that it's something with some rest and rehab, is you obviously don't want to see your 20-year-old undergo surgery on his shoulder. That really would be a concern. But here's hoping you shut him down for a month. Maybe he makes a couple rehab starts in August, and who knows, maybe we'll see him again in September. But a concern, as you said, but again, thankfully he's not undergoing surgery, and it seems to be more of just a rest and relax thing as compared to ligament damage or tendon damage or whatever it is in your shoulder that could have problems. So.
Yeah, there's certainly worry. There's no question about that. It's never, you know, shoulders are scarier than elbows almost. Like, I understand elbow, you know, if you have Tommy John, you're just out for a year. So that's obviously not great. But I think, you know, the prevailing sentiment's always kind of been, at least recently, since they've sort of mastered Tommy John surgery, is that shoulders are almost scarier just because you just kind of don't know. It's tougher to figure out. But it looks like it's not actual damage, which is nice. Just some weirdness there. And hopefully, you know, obviously he's been very, very good when he's pitched for a guy as young as he is. And I know Eric is still crying about him being on the DL for a while. But, yeah, it's, you know, hopefully he'll be back in September, as you mentioned, because, you know, for me, from what we saw, I think in a theoretical playoff series, he was on track to be one of the starters in the playoff series. I think now that becomes a little bit less certain, obviously, if he's not able to pitch until September 5th or something like that. You're talking about maybe having a handful of starts before the playoffs, and that makes it interesting. And again, I know let me say this again. I know we're just talking about hypotheticals here. I'm not guaranteeing a playoff spot. But, you know, he looked like the third best pitcher on the team for the starts that he was making. And, you know, now that's a little bit uncertain. And long-term matters more than short-term here, because he's a guy who is as young as he is and is an awesome prospect. But they can certainly use him now as well. So, yeah, hopefully that you know is actually not a big deal and just needs rest and that build up, and that we kind of just won't know. I think even when he comes back, we're not going to know that he's fine until he makes a couple starts. That's kind of the scarier thing here. Is that,
yeah,
like, he'll come back probably on schedule, but then if something else weird happens, like we just saw it. I mean, he got shut down for a while, came back, pitched well, but still wasn't apparently right, and that's the weirdness where you just kind of just can't peg that stuff.
Yeah, and we talked too about, you mentioned the hypothetical playoff starter, and really with Soroka down, it brings even more of a need for someone like a Max Fried, Luis Gajara, even a Colby Allard. Someone from that group has to step up, because you talk about being at the midway point. I'm not sure the Braves want 60%+ of their starts the rest of the way to come from a Julio Teheran, Brandon McCarthy, Anibal Sanchez, even though he's been pretty good so far. There's some reason to think he's going to come back down to earth a little bit. I'm not sure the Braves want or can allow those guys to make another, whatever that would be, if there's 80 games, about 50 starts, 40, 50 starts. You don't want that. And a lot of the talk, I guess, of whether or not they add a starting pitcher, I think will be determined with how well Fried pitches in the bigs. Gajara had a nice start last night for Gwinnett. If he can get right, everyone remembers how good he was when he got called up last year. You really hope one of the young kids can take a step forward, because that would really alleviate some of the depth concerns that you have. If they're not able to, obviously you worry if you don't want to be relying on a bunch of rookies in a pennant chase. I really think that's something that will influence whether or not Anthopoulos aggressively goes after a starter or not.
Yeah, they need something from the young guys there. And, you know, and we'll talk about it a little bit here, actually, as transitioning into the bullpen. And I think, you know, in minor defense of Brian Snicker, I will say minor defense of Brian Snicker, the starting rotation has not done him any favors with being able to not go deep into games. Even the guys who have been awesome this year, and Newcomb and Fulte, are not necessarily guys who are going super deep into games all the time. So it does make his life a little bit more difficult, and the bullpen weirdness stems a little bit from that. That's, again, I mean, I'm trying hard to defend him in some ways in that way, because I think my thoughts have been pretty out there on some of the bullpen management. But they definitely, you know, the lack of innings from the starters all season long has not been an easy thing for a bullpen that probably needs all the help it can get right now. But let's talk about the bullpen a little bit. There's the weirdness this week with Evan Phillips coming up for basically one day, not pitching, and then going back down. Wes Parsons, same thing. Matt Whistler got lit up and looks to be someone who you do not want pitching. Lucas Sims has been bad this year as well. There's all those guys. And then Royce Viscaino still on the DL. Like, I don't know, man. Like, how worried are you about the bullpen? Even today, as we talked about, as we record this on Sunday, it got really hairy with the bullpen. Some of that's management as usual, but some of it's just bad performance from some guys who are still in their spots for reasons, for whatever reason you want to say.
Yeah.
But it's not been a lot of fun. Even when they win, it feels like the bullpen is just terrifying right now.
Yeah, and I think it's the process versus results thing. If Snick goes into an inning and brings in Peter Moylan to face the first two batters who are righties, and then brings in Jesse Biddle to face the next two who are lefties.
Was that Friday night he did that? Was it Saturday?
Yeah, and it worked out. Whatever night. Yeah, I think I want to say
Friday.
Yeah. You know, and if it doesn't work out and they give up, you know, Moylan gives up a single and a walk, and then Biddle gives up a three-run homer, that's different, because the process and what Snit was trying to do there is the right thing, right? Righties only for Moylan, which I'm not even sure we want that at this point, but you kind of have to play with the hand you're dealt. And then Biddle for the lefties. Again, his splits are different, but at the end of the day, you're playing the smart matchup. Now, but we've seen time and time again, when you bring in a Lucas Sims in a one-run game, was it against Cincinnati the other night when he brought in Lucas Sims in a one-run game in the fifth inning against the middle of the order? That's what you can't have. So, I am concerned about the bullpen. The good news is, as long as Herodas' bullpen went well on Saturday and we didn't hear of any injuries, he's expected to be activated tomorrow before the Yankees series. That's good. I would hope that Phillips will be brought up again soon. I just don't see a reason to have Matt Whistler and Luke Jackson and Peter Moylan on this team. There's even some other guys, I think, in Double-A right now that I think
Wes Parsons is, I mean, aside from, I mean, Phillips, I think, is pretty obviously more talented than those guys, but even Wes Parsons projects to be better in a major league bullpen right now than Lucas Sims, like, for instance.
Yeah, I'm with you. And we've seen what Lucas can do. It's not a situation, well, you know, he had a bad starter, you know, a relief effort or two. I mean, this is a guy who's gotten a taste of the bigs for a while now, and he's just clearly not a big league pitcher right now, a starter or a reliever. So hopefully with the Rodas coming in, it gives you that ninth inning guy, late inning option there. It kind of bumps everyone down. Shane Carl has struggled now a couple times over the last few weeks. I wonder if the workload's starting to get to him. Hopefully you're able to hide him and use him a little bit more in sixth and seventh innings instead of relying on him late.
Well, that's where he should be. I mean, there's a couple of these guys that are major league bullpen arms, like Shane Carl, like maybe even Sam Freeman. Those guys are more like they should be your worst pitchers in the bullpen. And those should be the guys that you're pitching in low leverage spots, et cetera. I was going to ask you, I did not prep you for this, but I was going to ask you, provided Aroides is healthy, how many guys you quote unquote trust? That kind of goes away from what we normally talk about on this podcast, being more a little bit more analytical, but who are you comfortable with in your mind? You turn the Braves game on in the seventh inning in a 1 or 2 run game. Who are you actually comfortable with right now? I think, Winkler and Minter and Aroides are kind of implied, but who else are you okay with being in a game against a quality team in a tight spot, I guess?
I think Jesse Biddle has shown enough that I don't hold my breath and start tweeting about this is going to be a disaster. I think he's been
that,
good.
That
enough.
Is the bar to clear right now, honestly. It's right. Is this going to be a disaster or not?
Yeah. I mean, I think him and we mentioned Carl was so good early and he's kind of fallen off a little bit later. If Shane Carl comes into a 1 or 2 run game, I'm not covering my eyes, or at least not yet. Now, if he has a couple more outings like he had today, maybe it starts to be more towards that Peter Moylan, Sam Freeman group. Even when Sam Freeman comes in, I don't immediately expect bad results as long as the situation is right.
He's got to be but used then, correctly. That's the thing right, about Sam Freeman.
But then you bring him in the eighth inning of a 1-run game to face the middle, the middle of the Brewers order next weekend, and he gives up 4 runs. Well, that's when obviously you worry about him. So it's I think to answer your question, probably 4 that I feel legitimately comfortable with. If you throw Jesse Biddle into that group, and then as long as I guess you kind of hope and cross your fingers that Shane Carl gets it figured out because he was so good earlier. So I guess 4.5 is kind of what I would say. Are you around there?
Yeah, and I think it's very conceivable that we get Evan Phillips in that group pretty soon. I'm not sure enough about him just because, I don't watch a ton of Gwinnett. So it's like I'm going off of evaluations of people that I trust about Evan Phillips who project him to be a pretty good arm right away. But that's just kind of going off of that. But yeah, right now, it's the guys you mentioned. I think Sam Freeman is fine in low leverage spots against left-handed hitters. You're not gonna have a perfect bullpen. That's the thing people have to realize is that you're gonna have a weak spot or two that you don't love in every bullpen. Right now, the Braves just have too many of them because of Moylan and the long guys. It gets pretty ugly in a hurry. And I guess there's an argument that Moylan's not awful against right-handed batters, but that's you should never face left-handed batter at any point unless you just absolutely have no one else. It's what it is.
Well, and especially for a team that coming into the year, for better or worse, everyone, even the most optimistic fans thought, 80, 82 wins, there's going to be a success. They weren't going out. We've seen it kind of backfire on the Rockies this year, but they didn't go out and spend a bunch of money to upgrade the bullpen. I think most thought it would be an okay to kind of good unit coming in. And obviously, because the team as a whole is so good, it's been exploited a little bit. And you wish you had a little bit of a better bullpen. I think the good news is, generally, the bullpen is the easiest area to address at the trade deadline. Bad teams have no need for good bullpens, and you can usually find a good reliever or two on one of the 10 or 12 tanking or bad teams right now. So it's not like they're actively searching for a middle of the order first baseman. It's just a couple of relief guys, so you aren't always counting on the 3 or 4 that we just mentioned. And hopefully, you never know who you're going to get. Of course, being a month out, we haven't really heard any names linked to the Braves, but it's not the hardest thing in the world to find a couple of seventh or eighth inning guys.
Yeah, I do think, the smart money would be on if the Braves make a trade at all, the most likely spot's going to be in the bullpen. It's just so much easier to acquire someone who is a solid enough bullpen piece, at least on paper, than anything else. So I think I would certainly gamble on that if I was, if somebody asked me to bet them whether the Braves would make an upgrade in the bullpen at some point. I think they're going to do that. I'm not sure if it's going to be a huge name or a closer level kind of guy. Like Brad Hand was probably not going to happen, that kind of stuff. But a legit setup man that is an upgrade on what they have now, in the sixth, seventh inning makes a lot of sense. So that's a spot. I mean, I don't want to spend too much time on the trade deadline because we get a lot of questions about that all the time. We spend a lot of time on that already. And I think it becomes repetitive until you actually get some rumors kind of thing. Like we're not, you and I are not going to be able to report anything. It's more of you know, reading the tea leaves and talking about what we actually see out there. But I think now, at least for a couple of weeks here, we're probably kind of at the mercy of the rumor mill, because I think we pretty much shared all of our thoughts on what they could and couldn't do in theory. And we'll kind of just get there as we get there. Because, you know, I'm sure even if Braves don't make moves, they're going to be linked to somebody. In the next month or so, someone's going to come out, whether it be a third base, whether it be in the bullpen. Like you're going to hear about, or even starting pitcher, you're going to hear about somebody, and we'll talk and react to that as it comes in. All right, let's get to the meat of the podcast, and that is sort of like a first half review because we are in the middle, directly in the middle of the season at this point in time, and I teased this a little bit earlier on the pod the last couple of weeks, but probably no podcast next week. I am traveling, so unless some crazy trade happens and I have to record it from my phone, probably no podcast. So this is actually kind of a perfect time to do a sort of first half review. And you're also writing a little bit about this, so I'm going to hand this over to you a little bit so we can talk about sort of the first, I almost said first 81, first 82 games, because it didn't fall perfectly for us, but we almost did.
Yeah, so we'll talk team MVP, Cy Young, biggest surprises, biggest disappointments. So I guess we'll start this out. Brad, who was your first half MVP for the team?
Scott, this is not a difficult question to answer, my friend. The MVP of the league is on the Braves. So,
yeah,
I know Freddie's been not great necessarily lately by his lofty standards, but if you look at the numbers, he's still, in my opinion, the MVP of the National League at the season end of the day. The only other guy I think that has a legitimate argument to be ahead of him is Max Scherzer, and the home run today helped as well in terms of just you know, Freddie's numbers are still looking incredible, but they definitely cooled. But I think that's the easiest answer of the day is Freddie Freeman is the Braves MVP.
Yeah, it would be the first since 1999, Chipper Jones MVP.
And 99. By the way, that made the rounds today. I had actually forgotten that Chipper was not an All-Star 99, and he won the MVP.
Oh, really?
How insane is that?
Yeah.
I mean, it's because he was unbelievable in the second half of the season, like absolutely ridiculous. But the fact that he was not an All-Star in the season when he won the MVP award is absolutely outrageous.
That's a great trivia question.
Yeah, like shouts to Zach Gillard, who had that that I saw on Twitter today, a good friend of the program. But yeah, that was, I had forgotten that, and that's just a wild one. Freddie's not going to have that problem. He's going to start at first base, but there you go.
Yeah, yeah. He has something like, what, 3 million votes or something insane like that?
It's at this point, Freddie, Markakis, and Ozzie are going to start again, unless some weird Russian hacking takes place in the voting. Otherwise, those guys, I have insurmountable margins, because, you know, Markakis may not win. I mean, there's a chance he doesn't win the voting, but, you know, top three seems to be an absolute lock. Ozzy has a massive lead, and Freddie's lead is comical. So those guys are going to be starting in July.
And all three deserve it, honestly. I mean, it's not the Royals from a few years ago.
Absolutely. Markakis has definitely cooled versus his, you know, first month pace. But if you're just evaluating the first half of the season, he's absolutely a starting outfielder in the National League. So those guys all deserve it, to be sure. Even with Ozzy's weird stint as well, he's still been, you know, on the whole, fantastic, especially when you factor in his power and defense. No brainers.
I think moving on to Cy Young, I think Folty is the pretty obvious answer. Sean Newcomb has certainly been really good as well. But I think Folty, just from a consistency standpoint, and the only real gripe against him, I think, is that he doesn't work super deep into games. But when he's in there, he's really been good. His ERA is down to 2.02 on the year. His FIP is down to 2.99, which is really impressive. Striking out a million guys. The walks are a little higher than a little bit higher than what you would hope for, and he's shown a little bit of wildness at times, but he's done a really good job limiting hard contact. He's done a nice job keeping the ball in the stadium too. That was something I really struggled with early in his career. He gave up way too many homers. He's done a nice job limiting those today. So I think Folty's a pretty obvious answer, with obviously Sean Newcomb being great. I think even somebody like an AJ Minter or Dan Winkler could get a shout out in there too, just because you think about the bullpen and the inconsistencies. Those two guys have been really pretty steady rocks from day one. Without either of them, they'd be in even more trouble. So shout out to those guys.
Yeah, I mean, Folty's the answer. I do think your point about his workload is one that has to be stated. I mean, the three guys who qualify for the ERA title, whatever that means to you, are Folty, Newcomb, and Julio Teheran. None of those guys have more than 93 innings and 16 starts. That's kind of rough in terms of just eating innings. It's tough. But, you know, Fulte, the 2.02 ERA kind of writes itself. I think he should be an all-star. That seems pretty safe. By the way, in the midst of this, since we're talking about Fulte, we got a couple of questions about Fulte as a Cy Young candidate. I will say, if you think candidate as in someone who could finish third or fourth, then yes. But Max Scherzer has basically double the WAR of Fulte at this point. If Max Scherzer doesn't win the NL Cy Young because he gets hurt, basically, it's the only way he's not going to win the NL Cy Young.
Yeah, I think so. And DeGrom is in the same boat.
Yeah, he's right there as a pretty solid number two as well.
He won't have some of the standard numbers like wins just because the Mets are so terrible. But I think Scherzer and DeGrom, barring injury, are pretty locked in 1-2. But yeah, I mean, if you, again, you would have told us 3 months ago that Mike Foltynewicz would finish third or fourth in the NL Cy Young.
I mean, he's definitely top five, right? Yeah. I mean, kind of regardless of what you look at, I think it's pretty difficult to argue against him being top five in the National League at the moment, especially when you factor in that, you know, for better or worse, voters do tend to lean on guys who are on better teams, and that will certainly help him as well. Like, at the moment, this is before today's start, so I'm sure it went up from here. He entered today as the number seven guy in the National League in Fangraphs WAR, and a couple of guys that he trails, like John Gray, has a 5.77 ERA, but because he pitches in Coors Field, has more WAR than Mike Foltynewicz. But like legitimately, the only other guys in the same kind of stratosphere are Aaron Nola and Patrick Corbin, and maybe Miles Mikolas from the Cardinals, and that's kind of it. Everybody else is a pretty solid step behind Fulte, so he'll be in the mix if he keeps pitching like this.
Yeah, man, it's good for Fulte too. I mean, you think awesome. About the ups and downs he had, and he would have we all saw him. He would throw a no-hitter in Oakland, and I think two starts later he couldn't get out of the second inning against the Nats. I mean, there was all the talk of and that's why you ride with guys who can throw 100 with good breaking stuff, as they did, and the Braves are being rewarded for it, and he's been pretty terrific.
No question about it. I mean, you can't ask for anything more than Fulte, even with the kind of guys that we just talked about with his workload. I'll take the workload if he's going to throw up a 2.02 ERA. So it's okay, I promise.
If anything, it's limiting his innings a little bit too. I mean, he's never thrown 200 innings in a big league season. And
he won't this year either. There's no this chance year, of that at this point. But
which is good. I'd rather not, especially if you start getting into stressful playoff innings and what will more or less be playoff innings in mid to late September if the standings stay like they are. You do not want your 24, 25, 26-year-old starters logging super, super stressful innings. You worry a little bit about some injuries and just arm fatigue. So all good things from Fulte and really a nice year from him.
Yeah. Yep. What else should we talk about? I don't know. I mean, you got like surprises, you know, encouraging things, disappointments. I'm not sure there are a ton of disappointments. I guess Ender Inciarte would be the kind of the only guy that's a disappointment on the roster right now, like a big actual disappointment from what we thought they would be. I guess Julio might be close to that as well. But after this last start, it's a little bit harder to argue that. Ender continues to just not hit. I mean, it's a worry spot. And I think it's become almost more of a referendum on Snicker than it is on Inciarte. I still don't think Inciarte has been as actually as bad of a hitter as he's been this season. But I think it's almost more about the way that he's being used. Because if you factor in the entire package, you know, Inciarte's principal value is not his bat. So I mean, even with
they gotta hide him.
Yeah, I mean, even with the bad hitting this year, it's not like he's been a completely useless player. Like it's not. I'm looking at it now. He's still, you know, with an 81 WRC plus for the season entering today. He's still been worth 1.1 wins. And that, you know, basically you're on a 2-win pace despite being a 20% below the average hitter. That means you're doing a lot of things right. But, I mean, he's just not been as good. I guess I mean, in the lineup, is there anybody else that's been a disappointment? I think it's tough to argue that there is.
No, I mean, you talk about a team that's 48-34.
Yeah.
That was projected to win like 72 games all year. Yeah, absolutely. I think Julio just being inconsistent, but as you said, he's been really good and honestly, some of his, you know, he's had a couple of real bad clunkers that have inflated his numbers. So maybe the bullpen. But again, I mean, we've already hit the bullpen a bunch. And
I'm tempted to say, if you told me Brandon McCarthy was healthy, I would have told you he had a lower ERA than 4.92. So maybe he qualifies, but he's also been healthy. And I'm not sure I ever would have bet on that because that's always the thing with McCarthy is that when he's healthy, he's pretty good. And when he's not healthy, he's, you know, not healthy.
Yeah.
But so, I mean, I'm not sure that's a disappointment because he's actually been healthy. He's, I mean, until now, of course, now he's on the DL. But prior to that, you know, I guess, you know, ERA around five is not great. I would have taken the under on that to be sure. But I mean, yeah. it's probably tells us a lot that we're stretching to find disappointments. That means the team's doing well, and they are.
I think with McCarthy too, I don't know if it was The Athletic or 538, somebody said that he was one of the top five most positive, the most likely pitchers for positive regression in the second half, which was good. I think they cited, you know, with runners in scoring position, opposing hitters are hitting like 450 against him, which is absurd. I mean, even if he's serving up meatballs, the fact that, you know, 45% of the balls put in play are going to be hits is pretty ridiculous. So, again, you hope that the Braves have found some success with guys hitting the DL, whether legitimate or not, and then coming back and being really, really good for a start or two. You hope that McCarthy can be the guy he was last year with the Dodgers because he was pretty good. Even in April, he was pretty good. It was just May and in most of June, he was not great. So you hope he can figure it out, give him a little bit of rest. But you're right. I mean, when you're struggling to come up with disappointments 3 months into the season, that's always a fun thing to do.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we can pivot now to positives. Obviously, Markakis is one, a guy who is overachieved by a lot, projected, at least when compared to where we would have projected him. Ozzy Albies probably as well, given his age, to all, you know, be on the way to a 5-win season or more is probably an overachievement to some degree. And I would argue, at least for me, Johan Camargo and his 13% walk rate, which I still can't believe exists. Like, those three guys have all, I mean, Markakis more so than the other two, I will say, just because he's been incredibly awesome by any measure. But the other two guys that are pretty easy, I mean, I guess Folty as well would be the other one.
I think we would not have.
Yeah, I mean, Winkler we kind of knew was going to be good, but not this good. So, yeah, I mean, there's definitely more options for the biggest surprise in a positive way. I will still go with Markakis as if I had to pick one, just because he's been a completely different guy than he's been for the last 3 years. But there are definitely options here.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, even like Anibal Sanchez, who hasn't made a ton of starts, but Anibal, who was picked up, what, the second to last week of spring training after getting cut by the Tigers, he owns a mid-2 ERA. I mean, you talk about a guy who's just kind of come out of nowhere to fill in. And that's what good teams need. You know, you look at teams that kind of surprise and arrive a year too early, or, you know, kind of like the Twins last year. You need guys who you weren't counting on. Charlie Culberson is probably another one of the surprises. You know, the fact that we're having to think about just how many good surprises and positive outcomes there've been from guys who weren't being counted on is really fun and something you see with teams when they make runs, guys coming out of nowhere to have good seasons. So it's been a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, I mean, I forgot about Culberson in this discussion. You know, I made plenty of fun of Culberson's hitting ability before this season because he'd been an absolutely bad hitter everywhere he'd ever been until now, and suddenly he's been awesome. And, you know, you cannot overrate what he did while Cunha was out. I mean, it's a small sample, but Culberson, you know, his clutch stuff is probably, you know, a little bit overrated, but it definitely happened. And the fact that he's been a very, very solid utility guy and really the only guy, aside from the backup catcher spot, the only guy on the bench that's been doing anything is Culberson. So, yeah, I mean, shouts to him as well. The rest of the bench has been really bad. Like, I tweeted out some stats about Danny Santana this week. He's probably been the worst player in baseball, or at least close to it, over the last 3 years or 4 years. Like, he's really, really bad. And Peter Bordeaux is gone now. As well, which we probably should have noted earlier. But yeah, I mean, again, Culberson's been great. So that's another option. Sean Newcomb's overachieved still, by the way. I think we would have maybe thought he'd be pretty good this year, but not, you know, sub 3 ERA with improved control kind of good either. So yeah, there's 7, 8, 9 guys who I would say solidly are ahead of pace where we would have thought. And again, that's how you get to 48 and 34.
It's been a lot of fun. Up to the minute update here. Phillies walk off against the Nats. So the Braves are now... that'd be 3 games up on Philly and 6 up on the Nationals are 42-40, which is kind of crazy. I mean, this time last year they were like 20 games above 500 at this point.
I mean, how much money? How many? What would the odds have been at the 82 game mark that the Braves would be 6 games ahead of the Nats?
I wish I would have made that bet.
I mean, it had to be. The percentage-wise of that, like in the projection systems or Vegas, would have had to been absolutely insane. Like no one would have ever thought. Maybe like in a weird world, the Braves are like, you know, a game or two ahead of the Nats. If something goes well, 6 games, that's a ton. Like that's just crazy to even think about.
Dude, I don't know if I ever mentioned this on the pod. I was in Vegas in January or February The Braves at MGM were 125-1 to win the World Series, and I didn't put any money on it. And not that I'm saying the Braves are going to win the World Series, but just, I don't know, 125-1 a few months ago, and now I think they're something like 20-1 or 18-1.
Yeah, I mean, no, that, I mean, I, when I saw it, I recommended this to a friend, actually. We saw, I think it was after the Braves had already been playing well early on, and they were still like 75-1, somewhere in there. And I was like, and somebody asked me, and I said, look, I mean, they're not going to win the World Series probably, but 75-1, like for where they were, was just way too high. And within like a week or two, they were down to 20-1. Like, and like he sent me a text like, thanks. I'm like, yeah, I mean, I'm not going to tell you again. I'm not going to tell you that they're going to win, that your bet's going to win, but your value is good.
Yeah, like, right.
It's a good bet. I'll tell you that. So, I mean, yeah, again, they're in this great spot. All the systems that, I mean, it's always good to take more than one projection system into account, but and that's why I tweet out five different ones pretty regularly, of just kind of just giving you guys the whole picture, what they're going to look like, but all of them have the Braves as a likely playoff team now, which is a big departure.
Somebody mentioned, I think, if the Braves go 500 the rest of the way, they'll win 88 games, which I think this year, with just how competitive the divisions are, I think that's going to be
that's right kind of where I would say. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, this is tough, and it's changed every week, I feel like. But what would you like? You know, normal regression slash injuries, which we can't predict. But what would you project the record to be now at the end of the season? I think I'd probably go with like 89 or 90.
Yeah, I was gonna say 90 and 72 is what popped in my head, which I think again will be right on the cusp of both the NL East and obviously the wild card is gonna be nuts. You talk about the Braves, Phillies, Nats, Cubs, Brewers. I mean, if the Cardinals can get it figured out, the Cardinals, Diamondbacks, Dodgers, even the Giants are playing really well right now. Colorado has fallen off a bit, but yeah, I mean, there's going to legitimately be 9 or 10 teams, I think, at least barring just a bunch of injuries hitting one of them, you know, 9 or 10 teams in the NL that are legitimately fighting for the wild card, and only five are going to get in altogether. So it's going to be a lot of fun, a lot of stress probably in the later months, but after watching as much bad baseball, unimportant baseball as we've watched the last 2 or 3 years, it'll be a nice change.
Yeah, I've missed the baseball related stress. Just one thing on the record, if you just took their run differential and basically their Pythagorean win total is what that is, they're quote unquote supposed to be 50-32. So it's not like the Braves have gotten super lucky either. There are teams out there that have kind of been fluking their way to wins. The Braves do not really have that. They have the profile statistically of a team that is as good as they are, or maybe even a little bit better. So no fluke stuff either. They've been playing this well legitimately, and yeah, whew, it's been fun. I feel like we're saying that a lot, but it's probably justified. I do want to ask you at least one mailbag question. So is there anything else that you want to hit on the midway point, or are we kind of wrapped there?
No, I think we're kind of wrapped. We, you know, we talked offline. Just it feels a little early about trade deadline stuff. We're starting to see some of the fun articles about, you know, teams X and Y have had preliminary talks about who, it's, you know, player Z. But it is in, I tweeted this earlier in the week, and I've seen a few others mention it as well. Last winter, almost nothing broke. Like, all the Braves moves were team announced. Like, it
I
wasn't
mean, the like, famous. The famous one was the massive Dodgers trade that nobody had.
No,
like when that, you have a six, whatever, what was the seven player trade, some crazy amount of players and salaries. That kind of deal does not just not break. It's insane that they were able to announce that without anybody breaking it.
Well, and not only that, but you think about the players. They were all guys who have been in the league for, you know, 10 plus years.
Guys, yeah.
You know, one of those guys hears and they're close with, you know, whoever, Ken Rosenthal, and tweet him and say, or, you know, text him and say, hey, I'm going to Atlanta. You know, nobody had, I mean, it was team announced. I mean, as crazy as that was, most of the signings were team announced. It's kind of the exact opposite of the old front office, where I feel like we heard about trades happening like 6 days before they actually did, which is both from a fan perspective. It's nice in the sense that you don't go crazy, like refreshing every couple minutes, like you probably do if you're an NBA fan this time of year. But it also stinks because you're not going to get the nonstop rumors as we seemingly had with Copy in charge.
Yeah, I mean, it's not great for us on the content side of things to have less rumors. Huh. But
yeah,
if you're a team, you do not want that. I mean, I'm of the mind, at least in my opinion, if I'm a team, I don't want to be leaking a lot. I mean, there are certain ways where leaking is strategically helpful, but on the whole, if you ask me, if I was a GM and I want to have a leak-free front office or a super leaky front office, give me the leak-free one. I just kind of let you operate in a little bit of a veil of secrecy, which is probably helpful in the grand scheme. So, yeah, I mean, I'm sure we'll get some rumors. There's no question about that. They can't hold off everything. I mean, at some point, you know, the guys that are really good at this, whether it be Rosenthal or John Heyman, and those guys will definitely break some stuff. But still, yeah, it's been weirdly quiet. I think it still will be. But now that we're in July officially, it's July 1st as we record this, it's time for it to start turning up a little bit. And I think probably the All-Star break is when it starts really heating up because everybody's in the same place for a few days. Like, you know, GMs are in the same place for a while. And they're not having like as many meetings as there are in the offseason, like winter meeting stuff. But guys being around usually will spark some discussions, if nothing else. Yeah, and they have time just chilling, by the way.
Yeah, right.
Just have a few days off that are not really off. Like, you just no games to focus on and start, you know, being a dreamer, you can say, about your roster. All right, before we get out of here, the one question that I got, I think, the most this week in terms of the mailbag was about Touki Toussaint, which is weird because he's not in the majors. But I picked this one out from Deke Bear, and it was the first person I saw that asked me. And he asks, does Touki's best projection for the Braves currently land him in a bullpen closer role, at least for 2018? So it's basically been some version of, will Touki be in the bullpen by the end of the season? Where are you at on that in terms of will be or should be? And then, of course, I think personally for me, I want him to be a starter long term. So does that actually factor in as well with the discussion?
Definitely a starter long term. I think you kind of see where he's at, partly from his innings perspective too. He's already made, I think, 16 or 17 starts this year with Mississippi. He's been excellent. Last night he had 11 strikeouts. I mean, his stuff is as good as it gets. So I would imagine fairly soon he'll move up to Gwinnett. I mean, he had about half of a season last year in AA, and he's obviously there now. I would like to see him there maybe by the big league All-Star break. I'd imagine he'll get bumped pretty soon, and it would be fun in September to kind of see what he has out of the bullpen with that fastball curveball combo. I don't think it really would hurt his development in any way, because I'd rather him face big leaguers, you know, twice a week than him just kind of sitting at home and recovering once the minor league seasons wrap up. So certainly an exciting prospect, somebody who I think could help the bullpen just given his arsenal. But again, you have to kind of see where he's at physically. If his elbow and shoulder are kind of worn out by the end of the year, you don't want to overpush him, especially if they're able to add some other bullpen arms in the meantime. But all good things for Touki. I think long term, he has as much upside as anybody in the organization.
Yeah, I mean, he's his ceiling is monster. I mean, I think it was I'm trying to remember who. There's been a couple people that have said this, so I'm just blanking at the moment of who I was talking to about this on Twitter. But I mean, if you're wanting Touki in the bullpen, you're envisioning that David Price role that he had when he first arrived in Tampa Bay, the Adam Wainwright role. Like, they're guys who have become top flight starters after they debuted in September and October in a bullpen role. I can see them trying to do that with Touki. I mean, it's probably an option that you do if you don't get somebody in the bullpen at the trade deadline, for instance, more often than if you actually do make a substantial investment there. But his stuff, I think, would play up really well right now. He's still very young, but at the same time, you know, his arsenal would be just devastating out of the bullpen, I feel like. So, I mean, it may not work. I wouldn't bother me if they tried it. And as long as the future eye is on him being a starter and not like somehow just converting him into a bullpen arm now, I'm totally cool with it, because there's no reason that you couldn't have a guy in your bullpen if they're making the playoffs in October that could, you know, come in, throw two innings and just be absolutely dominant. It'd be fun.
Yeah, and again, I think they'll give him a chance at the least, right? I mean, why not see what you have? Yeah. So, but yeah, I think the world of Touki. We were talking about him a couple weeks ago, even before he went on this run, of a guy who I think nationally the writers were a little too low on, just given his, you know, his offerings and his makeup and everything like that. And he's really kind of come on and has helped bring, I guess, part of the next wave. And Kyle Wright's pitching well, and you hope Gahara can get back to where he was and everything. So all good thing. It is nice. We were talking the other day. It's nice not kind of religiously following the minor league box scores every night.
Don't tell Eric. Don't tell Eric that. Eric's getting mad at you.
Other than the diehard, diehards. Because, yeah, I mean, when the team is 40 and 65, yeah, you're going to scour the box scores, or at least I would, a little bit closer than I am right now, just because the big league team has been so much fun to watch, and there's so many storylines with it. But I'm with you. I think Touki in September would be a lot of fun, and if he's as dominant as I think what he could be, I don't see any reason why you couldn't let him get those chances to show he can face big leaguers. And even if he's not up at the start of next year, it would be cool to see him get a taste and get him ready for what I would assume would be a start in AAA next year.
Yeah, so there's a little bit on Tukey, and if hopefully that will matter. And we're talking about a playoff bullpen, and if we're talking about a playoff bullpen when we get to mid-September and beyond, then I think that competition will get even louder, because he's the one guy in the system right now that's at a high enough level that also could sort of project in that way. Like, I mean, Colby Allard is not a guy that you're going to suddenly say go throw in the bullpen and be this like dynamic arm. He's more of a starter. Like, I do think Colby Allard is talented, but he's not in the same way that Tukey is. Like, he's kind of the only option of the guy that could actually do this kind of role. I guess Gohara would be the other guy as well that could just be in that, you know, but they've jerked him around so much now that I kind of just want him to let him start for as long as possible.
Yeah.
So,
oh, same here. Yeah.
Yeah. So Tukey's the only option there, I think, at least realistically, and hopefully they'll at least consider that if the time comes and they feel as though he can sort of transition into that role. All right, Scott. Well, we've probably gone long enough. Anything else that you want to get out there? Please do. I know you got some writing coming. So tell people where they can find that, and yourself on Twitter as always.
Yeah, Monday we'll have. You mentioned it's kind of the just at the midway point. So Monday we'll have the full write up on the MVP and the Cy Young and surprises and all that good stuff. Some storylines for the second half. And yes, Scott Coleman 5'5". Always a good time there.
Always a good time, especially during college basketball season. I've really enjoyed the like three NBA tweets you've sent me in the last like 2 weeks.
Hell yeah.
Just because you parachute in, and you know that I'm doing this quite a bit. There was not a lot of sleep for me. Today's July 1st. If you're not an NBA fan, you wouldn't care about that. But I was up until probably 4 a.m. this morning writing about things that happened overnight. So
where's LeBron going?
I'm still going to say the Lakers, but I have no clue. That is
which
not
sucks
sourced.
Because I'm not a big NBA guy, but the one NBA team I cannot stand, and I love LeBron, the one NBA team I cannot stand are the Lakers. So him going there, I don't know. I don't think I could root for him, even if they had LeBron.
I can see that, especially when you're like your tangential NBA allegiance is the Kings, who you're supposed to hate the Lakers if you're a Kings fan. So I'm with you. I mean, it doesn't bother me. I have no real negativity towards the Lakers. My dad was a Lakers fan. I was actually born in California. I didn't live there very long and don't remember anything about it. My dad was a Lakers fan for a while, and I kind of still follows them, at least tangentially. So I have no real interest in them either way. But, you know, LeBron's LeBron, and he'll be the biggest story in the league, regardless of where he goes. But anyway, too much basketball talk on the pod, Scott. We could do this offline if you'd like. People get really mad. I don't think the crossover between diehard Braves fans who listen to this podcast and diehard NBA fans is terribly big. There are some of them, including me, of course. And I think, you know, Garob. There's some guys on our staff who also really like basketball. But I think the Venn diagram is not too crossover there. So anyway, thanks for listening, everybody, and thanks for joining me, Scott. I really appreciate it, man.
Of course, buddy. Take care.
As for everybody else, please subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, especially. Leave 5-star feedback. Leave a positive review if you like the show. If you hate the show, yell at me on Twitter at VTRoland, and please follow the site on Twitter at Talking Chop, and read us every single day at talkingchop.com. We will see you guys in the near future.